Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, December 24th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. Go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. Simple PDF file, download it, print it out, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll get access to a completely free and private app. You'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you click on that, it'll let you download this completely free, completely private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. There are also a host of audio files you can download and listen to them time and again. They serve as a tutorial for this body of work, and you can give us a call at 563-999-3581 to ask about the tools, to pose a question, to state a refutation of what we're talking about. We hope people will question this for themselves. We hope people will continually challenge what we say so that they can observe directly for themselves the truth of it. And when you do that and your life gets better, if you've got a comment, a question, or a testimonial, give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1. We're doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary from Pam Grout this year. And so today's Course in Miracles workbook lesson is lesson 358, and it reads, no call to God can be unheard nor left unanswered. And of this I can be sure, the Creator's answer is the one I really want. Now, we've had some questions about this over the past couple of weeks. What does it mean when the Course in Miracles says call, a call to God? It doesn't mean someone sitting at home or standing out in a field yelling, "Dear God, please hear me." It means the clear intention to know the truth of life. And this can be done silently in your own mind. It can be done with a shift of thought. It can be done by speaking it out loud. But it's not a literal calling to an entity outside of you. What this is intending is desiring to see, to experience life accurately as it truly is, the magnificence of life, the essence of it, the intensity of it, without the labeling of this is good, this is bad, without the judgment part, just being fully open, awake, and aware in the moment. The commentary here reads, "You who remember," and this is the person writing this speaking to their creator. "You, creator, you are the one who remember what I really, all alone, you are the one who remembers what I really want. You speak for creation, and so you speak for me. And what you give me comes from creation itself. Your voice, the vibrations of life, the actuality of life, creator, is mine as well. And all I want is what you, life, love, creation, offers me in whatever form you choose that it would be mine. I'm going to step into allowance, acceptance, surrender, and humility. I'm going to allow the flow of life, and I'm going to revel in it. I'm going to be appreciative of it and for it. Let me remember all that I don't remember right now. Let my voice be still. Let your voice be the one I hear. Let your love, your extension of creation, be the focus of my attention." So, it's Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today, lesson 358. Course in Miracles experiment lesson from Pam Grout, 358, is titled, "The Easy Way to Get Found." She quotes Rebecca Solnit, who said, "Many people never disband their armies and never go beyond what they know." Pam Grout writes, "So far, knock on wood, I've never required the aid of a search and rescue team. These search and rescue teams are selfless, often volunteer do-gooders, and they devote their time to finding and providing aid to people like campers, climbers, hikers, and other humans who, for whatever reason, aren't attending to the weather, the geological landmarks, the direction of the sun, or for that matter, their own intended route. As a result, they end up lost, distressed, and sometimes, sadly, in imminent danger. Although necessary skills vary, and this depends on whether or not it's a mountain rescue or a ground rescue, a rope rescue, a swift water rescue, etc. Although the skills vary, every search and rescue pro knows this one fact. Children are far easier to find than adults because, well, they're willing to admit they're lost. They don't stray far. They curl up in a shelter somewhere, and they know they need help. When it comes to the Course in Miracles lesson 358, it pays to, as JC suggests, quote, become as a little child. Sure, I can stubbornly seek for truth in the path, and I can continue backtracking and crisscrossing and struggling for the answer. Or I can curl up and rest, knowing I am safe, I am invulnerable, and never really lost. Every call to the Creator is heard and answered. And that answer is all I really want. That's paraphrasing today's lesson 358. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and our Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And I thought I would share the Richard Rohr commentary today. The fact of the matter is, your voice is the voice of the Creator, your true voice. Let me remember that all I know, let my voice be still remembering that your voice is like mine, that my voice is yours. The last line in the commentary from today's lesson says, let me forget myself. Let me not forget that myself, my little self, is nothing, but my capital S self, that connection to the Creator, is all there is. You speak for me, Creator. You are creation, and I am a part of you. And what you give comes from creation itself. Your voice, Creator, is mine as well. And all I want is whatever you offer me. So Richard Rohr's daily meditation for today says there's only one message. Oddly enough, maybe Richard Rohr is tuned in to the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. But he says that after quoting something from John 1:14, John 1:14 says, and the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we saw his glory, the glory of the Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. Father Richard describes the Christmas message ultimately as union. The healing of our separate selves and the healing of the world through the Christ mind. It says, I know because it's Christmas Eve, you're surely hoping for some very special meditation. I don't think I have one. The reason for that is because there is really only one message. If we're praying, it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. If we're quiet once in a while, even on a busy day like today, that message goes deeper and deeper and deeper still. There really is only one message, and we just have to keep saying it until finally we are undefended enough to hear it, to let it in, and to observe it directly as the truth. That message is, there is no separation between God and creation. That's the message. We have a hard time believing it. We have a hard time observing it directly. And so this word, this eternal word of the Creator that we read about in the prologue to John's Gospel as the Book of Wisdom, it says, and it took its abiding place on earth. It leapt down to earth, this energy, this creative force, this, quote, word, close quote, in order to heal every bit of separation and splitness that we experience. Let's get this straight. That splitness and separation is the cause of all sadness in the human race. When we feel separate, when we feel disconnected, when we feel split off from ourselves, from our family, from reality, from the earth, from God, we will be angry and depressed as people. Because when that happens, we know we weren't created for separateness. there's another part of us, a deeper part of us still, that knows we were created as union with everything. So the Creator sent into the world the mind, the awareness, the connection that would personify that union. That Christ mind, that one mind that would put the human and the divine together, that would put spirit and matter together, that would end the false perception. And that awareness of the truth of our lives and connection to everything, that's what we spend our whole life trying to observe, trying to experience, that this extraordinary earthly sojourn means something. He says, sometimes we wake up in the morning wondering, what does it all mean? What is it all for? What was I put here for? Where is it all heading? He says, I believe it's all a school. And it's all a school of love. Everything is a lesson. Everything. Every moment. Every visit to the grocery store. Every moment of our so-called ordinary life is meant to reveal, oh my heavens, I'm a part of the one creation. Now he uses other words here, but I'm going to leave it at that. Oh my goodness. I'm a part of this magnificent creation. It's all okay. I'm already home free. There's no place I have to go. I'm already here. But the problem is, if we don't tap into that, we create a belief in separation and a belief that there's meaninglessness. There is no meaning. Richard Rohr closes with this. Friends, we need to surrender to some kind of ultimate meaning. We need to desire it, seek it, want it, and need it. I know no one likes to hear this, but we even need to suffer for it. And what is suffering? Suffering is emptying out of the soul so there's room for love. There's room for the Christ mind, so there's room for the creative energy. Emptying out the soul. So, here's our ancient Aramaic translations coming to us through the Kabor's manuscript and the Kabor's foundation that Dr. Michael Rice was part of, and it says, prayer from the ancient Aramaic was a word or a phrase that meant setting a trap for God. So here's Richard Rohr saying we need to empty out the soul. And here's the ancient Aramaic that says setting a trap for God. I was giving a talk once to a Unity and or Religious Science Church. I probably did it in both of those places. And I was preparing for it, and part of what I was going to talk about was this definition of the word prayer from the ancient Aramaic. And I got this image of a live trap for a raccoon or a squirrel. And probably because at that point in time I was living in a house that had raccoons in the attic, and I had to hire somebody to come and set traps and get rid of the raccoons and clean up the attic, etc. So I had fresh in my mind this image of this live trap, and it's a cage that's empty and the door that opens, and you leave the door open and you put food at the far end of the cage, and when the squirrel or the raccoon walks into the cage, it trips the level because it's going for the food. It trips and the door closes behind it. And so it's a humane way to trap them and relocate them. And I got this image of that wire cage, that live trap. Only it was completely jammed full of balled up newspaper. It was full of newspaper. Now there's food that the squirrel or the raccoon would want at the far end of it, but the squirrel or the raccoon can't get in the cage to get the reward, the whatever, the treat, the food. Well, that trap, you can set that trap out, but you're not going to catch any squirrels or raccoons. Why? Because they can't even get in it. That was the image in my head. How do I make that trap functional? The only way to make that trap functional is to get it emptied. Leave it completely open and emptied. No newspaper, nothing else cluttering it, just open and empty. That's what we need to do to be to be knowable to God, to be able to receive, to tune into the energy of the creation, to be able to awaken to our connection to everything. And so here it is at the end of Richard Rohr's meditation for today. We need to empty our souls. We need to learn to sit in the quiet. You know, they talk about how your creator, your connection to all of creation, comes to you through a still small voice. Well, still means very quiet. It's not foaming and frothing at the mouth. And small means it's not very loud. So if I'm going to hear something that is small and soft, I need to quiet myself. I can't even be breathing heavily. I probably shouldn't be moving at all. And this is the essence of what the ancient Aramaics talk about as prayer. Slowing down and tuning myself to the frequency of creation. Slowing myself down, getting quiet enough that I can hear something that's very gentle, the still small voice. Emptying my soul, as Richard Rohr points out in this meditation, at the end of the meditation, so that it can be filled with something else. It reminds me that Michael talks about the Beatitudes, and the King James Version of the Bible has Beatitudes that say something like, blessed are the poor in spirit. And he talks about how, you know, their translators figured out that that word poor in the ancient Aramaic is just a tiny little dot on the paper, a fly speck on the paper that changes the word home to the word poor. If it's missing, it's home or poor. If it's there, it's home or poor the other way. So doesn't it make sense that this powerful, deep spiritual teacher would say something like, blessed are those who make their home in the spirit, rather than blessed are those who don't have much connection to spirit? The other thing is, if it were intended to be this word empty, to be without spirit, to have poor, to have the word poor be applicable there, there's this other meaning for the word poor, which is much more like open and empty. So it's much more likely that instead of a message about being poor in spirit, what we were told at that point by this great teacher was, it's important for us to be open. It's important for us to make our home in that open space. And Richard Rohr brings us back to that at the end of this meditation today. We need to be empty in our soul. We need to be open and listening to that still, small, quiet voice. And the more we're willing to do that, the more we tune into the frequency of the one mind, the creative mind, Christ mind, if you will, and the easier it is for us to live with that awareness, that sense of meaning, that connection, that flow. And that's what his message is about for today. There is only one message, and that is whatever we can do as individuals to wake up to the fact that we are a part of the Creator and of creation, and there is no separation. And anything we can do to wake up to that will improve the quality and experience of our lives. And that could be enough to say, this is why I'm here. I'm here to improve the quality of my experience of life by remembering my connection to the Creator and all of creation. And one really good way to do that is take 100% responsibility for every negative emotional state I experience and be willing to actively engage the use of tools to dismantle that, we'll call it an errant process, and restore myself to this loving, grateful, fluid, some would say true perception of the flow of life and my relation to all of creation. And if you want to do that and do it quite efficiently and expediently, tools are available at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. So, we've got about 30 minutes left, and we're wide open for your comments, questions, refutations, answers, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How is your holiday experience so far? What would you like to share? How can we support you? I've had a session already this morning with someone who is just really working to try and present loving, awake, joyful, respectful energy in a family that is really struggling. I mean, they've got serious physical problems. They've got mental and emotional problems. And there's been a history of death and loss in this family within this December month. And yet, through all of that, with the use of tools, this person is able to say, quite honestly, this is one of the best Decembers she's had in all of her memory of her adult life. So these tools can make a difference. And if there's anything we can do to support you in making a difference for the better in your life, that's why we're here. 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1. Let us assist you in any way possible. I was working with somebody yesterday who has very significant presence of people testing positive for coronavirus in their lives and people getting quite ill in their lives. And they have this set of beliefs that says, this is wrong, this shouldn't be this way. And the more they pour their mind energy into that, this is wrong, this shouldn't be that way, the more frustrated and angry they get. And clearly, the message from today's Course in Miracles workbook lesson would help them if they could recognize that if I just assume that the flow of life in its grandness, the flow of creation, is the best of all possible things, and whatever happens is part of this life. And my response to it can become my lesson, can become the perfect lesson for me. And to start giving out to life exactly what I would hope to get from it. That's combining yesterday's lesson with today's lesson. The miracle of life reflects the Creator's love, and everything that happens is the creation's gift to me. And if I can learn to use it that way rather than getting into labeling, this is bad, this is wrong, this shouldn't be happening, I know better than that, I know that this is what life should be, and this person shouldn't be ill, and that bank account should not be empty, etc. If I get into that mindset and I fight against what unfolds in my life, and I fight to try and prove that I'm right and life itself is wrong, I create a significant amount of pain and suffering in my life. And the offering from the Course in Miracles is, it doesn't need to be like that. You don't need to torture yourself by fighting against life. It's the very same message that comes from the Tao Te Ching. And one really good way to tap into the wisdom from the Tao Te Ching is to get a hold of Alan Cohen's book, The Tao Made Easy. And one of the main messages of the Tao is that, very much what the Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery would say, whatever occurs in your very ordinary life is the perfect unfolding of life for you and the perfect process through which you can learn what you need to learn to be happier, to be more loving, to be more joyful. And so think about monitoring, staying on top of it for yourself to recognize the earliest warning sign that you are fighting or resisting the flow of life the way it is. And to whatever degree possible, move into allowance and surrender and humility and understanding of your participation in this thing we call life and creation as a co-creator, not as a victim. And the more you do that, the better your life gets. Messages like, those things that people would say are obstacles on their path are actually the path. There's no such thing as an obstacle on the path in the way of the Tao, because all of life is the Tao. It is the way. And I can create a tremendous amount of resistance to what is. I could also choose at any given moment to go with the flow of what is, to offer acceptance and allowance and surrender to what is. And depending upon which of those I choose, I'm going to create a life experience that can be dramatically different from its opposite. And life events can still flow, and I can still create a dramatically different experience. I don't have to stop the flow of life to choose joy. I have the ability to choose joy at any given moment. I have the ability to focus on what there is to be grateful for in the experience of life each moment. And I know we've been through this before, and some people say, well, that's, you know, Pollyannish thinking, and you can only say that because you're a privileged person and you've got money or you've got this or that. And I would just call your attention to how powerful these teachings are, especially when you hear them from someone like Roger McGowan, who spent 20-some years on death row in Texas, one of the most abusive places on this continent. And instead of becoming embittered and resentful and depressed, he's turned into a spiritual teacher. And he says everything in life can be viewed as a lesson. And everything in life can be seen to be about love. This is from somebody who's living in a 6-foot by 6-foot by 10-foot cell in isolation, and the only contact he has with other people is abusive guards interacting with him, actively creating miserable physical experiences for him. And instead of giving in to the bitterness and hatred and resentment and negativity that is surrounding him, he became a spiritual teacher. And he continues his correspondence with people like Pierre Pradervan. And Pierre Pradervan wrote a book that's basically a compilation of letters from Roger McGowan on death row. So this idea that I can choose the focus of my conscious awareness and choose a loving interpretation and choose to ask to be taught by life every moment is not just Pollyannish wishful thinking. This is what people like Nelson Mandela and Roger McGowan have done, even in some of the most brutal, difficult, challenging, painful, physically painful situations on record. At times like this, I like to quote Guy Finley, who says, "There is nothing more practical than true spirituality." And while I can absolutely hope that no one I know, that I and nobody I ever know, ends up in anything as difficult as the prison or the death row that Roger McGowan is in, I can also hope that with whatever daily challenges I face, I can learn from that awareness of the power of creation, of what I'm creating with my own mind energy and my own emotions by what I focus on. And so I'm hoping that I never again, or that I catch it soon the next time I fall into feeling like a victim. The next time I fall into complaining about life, I'm hoping I'll catch it sooner and sooner and learn from the great teachers like Nelson Mandela and Roger McGowan, and choose again whenever I wake up and realize that I've chosen a negative interpretation of life or a negative meaning for life events. My hope is that through this work and practicing it and teaching it to others, I will continually catch that sooner and sooner and step into the choice for love. Step into the choice of looking at what's the most loving, optimistic, procreative way to look at this situation. You know, what's the way for me to move from this negative mindset into asking to be shown and asking to be taught? Because the sooner I do that in every situation, the better my life gets. The longer I sit in the resistance, in the labeling things as bad or wrong, in the fighting against what is, the more negativity I create in my own life experience. And I'm at the stage in my development where I'm saying, you know, I've had enough of that negativity. I've had enough of contributing to the negativity by labeling whatever the flow of life is as bad or wrong and fighting against it. So here's my hope, here's my practice, here's my path is to try to be taught by the great teachers like Guy Finley and Dr. Michael Rice and The Way of Mastery and The Course in Miracles and Byron Katie and Ho'oponopono, and to be taught and eventually learn so that I can practice it at deeper and deeper levels each new present moment, that everything about the flow of life is here for me. It's happening for me, not to me. So that's what we're here to support people in doing, and especially during the holidays where it's extra challenging and people have all kinds of expectations about how the holiday should be and how people should act and how they should be. And if you're having one of those challenges, give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1, and we'll have a conversation. We've got about, oh, I don't know what it is, 15, 16 minutes left before we hopefully hand it over to Michael and Jeannie for the second hour. And then, as I've mentioned before, I'll be off all next week, so there will only be whatever Michael and Jeannie put out for next week, but there will not be an internet radio show beginning at 11 a.m. Central Time for next week. That will pick up again on January the 3rd. And we can... We'll also pick up our support groups in that week of January the 3rd. So, comments, questions, answers, soliloquies are always welcome. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. Had the... As I said, the usual flurry of people who are struggling to get through the holidays in a loving way. And I'd say probably the largest roadblock to that or barrier to that I encounter in my caseload is people who are pouring more energy into expectation than they are pouring into observation. People who are pouring more energy into shoulds and shoulding all over themselves rather than being in allowance, being in surrender, being in gratitude, being in appreciation. And if you can step into that, step into observation, catch at the earliest warning sign that you're in resistance to the flow of life, then my personal experience has been my life gets better by leaps and bounds the more I do that. So I was thinking about the Tao Made Easy as I'm mentioning that I'm going through that book again. And one of the stanzas from the Tao is, "What is firmly established cannot be uprooted. What is firmly grasped cannot be slipped away. It will be honored from generation to generation." And that reminds me of the beginning from the Course in Miracles that says, "Nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists. And since most of us as human beings have had a lot of experience of feeling threatened and have had a lot of experience of negativity, applying that would mean when I create a negative experience, it's a false creation. It doesn't really exist outside of my own mind. And when I feel threatened, I'm creating that experience of being threatened, that my essence can't be threatened. And so the experience of feeling threat is an internally created experience." So, near the end of the book, the Tao, it talks about how science is finally validating the connection of all things. Says that Dr. Roger Nelson of Princeton University has spent more than 20 years developing the Global Consciousness Project and using random number generators to detect strong waves of feelings in masses of human beings. "When this machine is influenced by intense emotional energy, the sequencing stops being random and falls into patterns." Dr. Nelson's team has placed 70 random number generators around the globe to see if they can detect trends in the group mind of emotions of humanity. The researchers discovered that on September 11th, 2001, the day of the terrorist attacks on the U.S., the random number generators registered a huge spike in emotional energy around the globe. And listen to this. That spike in emotional energy around the globe happened 4 hours before the planes crashed into the Twin Towers. So this is a precognition. This is an extrasensory perception. This is psychic power. 4 hours before the planes crashed into the Twin Towers, there was a spike in emotional energy that disrupted the random number generators they had placed around the globe. The GCP, Global Consciousness Project, also found precognitive strikes that were associated with globally significant events like the death of Princess Diana in 1997 and the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami. So, what this is suggesting is that somewhere in the collective consciousness of human beings, we sense when a significant event is about to occur, and we generate mass emotional ripples as a result, mass spikes of measurable energy. Not only are we psychic as individuals, but we have a collective knowingness as humanity. And spiritual teachers have been trying to tell us for millennium that all minds are joined. Now, science is demonstrating this profound capacity. And that brings us back to what I was talking about earlier, which is, how do I tap into that? Well, I get quiet. I put down the electronic devices. I turn off the music. I quit listening to the gossip. I quit filling every moment with busy work activities. That's the only way that I'm able to hear the still small voice, to tune my receiver to the frequency of that emotional energy or that knowing energy or that Christ mind or the creative energy, the God energy. It is so rare in this Western world that anyone spends any time alone, quiet with their own thoughts. Like Dale Allen Hoffman says, he says, you know, if you want to take your spiritual work to the next level, I've got several things you can do. And people say, okay, great, tell me. And he says, okay, here's the first one. Go home at night in your bedroom, turn off all the lights, no incense, no mantras, no music, no meditation music, just lock yourself in your bedroom alone. No music, no phone, no distraction, no computer. Just sit there for 2 solid hours alone in your bedroom, in the quiet, in the dark, with nothing to distract your mind. And Dale says, to a person, people come back to him and say, okay, what's step two? And he says, did you do step one? And they say, well, no, but... And so he says, well, never mind step two, because it doesn't make any difference. If you can't do step one, step two won't benefit you. This is an inside job. Your creation of experience in life is an inside job. Those people in Kentucky and Tennessee and other places that were hit by tornadoes in the past couple weeks. What people experienced through those days and nights was an inside job. The tornado wasn't an inside job, but the experience those people had was created inside of themselves. And some of them, and I think I mentioned this yesterday, some of them turned that into an experience of community and connection and being able to help others. Somebody was telling a news story. They were down there reporting on it, and they went to a church, and the church was handing out all of these supplies and water, bottled water, And so the news reporter went over to talk to the pastor or the minister of the church and said, you know, so tell me about this family over here as parishioners. And the minister said, well, they're not part of the church. And they're standing there handing out bottled water and supplies to families that have lost everything in this storm. So the news reporter went over and interviewed the people and found out they had lost everything. Their home had been wiped out. They're living in a shelter. And they came out to stand in the rain to hand out supplies to other people like themselves who'd been affected. They were choosing to act proactively to help others in the immediate wake of having lost all of their physical possessions and their house. And I guarantee you, they were creating an experience that was very different than somebody who had their possessions damaged or wiped away, or maybe their house was still standing, but their beloved trees were felled by the tornado, and they sat there feeling like a victim and bemoaning and complaining about it. It's not that one is right or one is wrong. It's just that they are very different. I've been in both positions, and I can tell you from firsthand experience, when I choose a loving, neutral, optimistic, surrendering, allowing, accepting filter, my life gets better. When I choose a label that says, this is bad, this is wrong, this shouldn't happen, this person shouldn't have done this, my life is very, very different and much less favorable, a much less preferable experience when I complain or when I see myself as a victim. I can tell you that from firsthand experience, and I can tell you that from now thousands of people I've worked with over the past 47 years in therapy. It's going to be 48 years soon. So, choose again and choose wisely. Choose after you've awakened to the fact that your choice is a powerful creative force. Your choice of what to focus on, your choice of a filter, your choice of the label of victim, or your choice of the label of co-creator is a powerful, powerful influence in your life. And if we wake up and we are reminded of this and we are given specific tools like the ones available at whyagain.org, whyagain.org, we can create an entirely different and, to my way of thinking, a much more preferable way of life and experience. One of the passages from the Tao says, do you think you can conquer the universe and improve it? I do not believe this can be done. The universe is sacred. You cannot improve it. If you try to change it, you will ruin it. And I would say here, you will ruin your experience of it. If you try to hold on to it, you will lose it. The world, the universe, is sacred, and you cannot improve it. You can improve your experience of it. You can improve your allowance, acceptance, and surrender to it. Carrying body and soul and embracing the one. If you do this, can you avoid separation? If you are attending fully and becoming supple, you can be as a newborn babe. You can have the experience of the unity of all creation. And that gives a very different experience of life. So, we're down to our last minute and a half. Jeannie Rice has joined us. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim, and to you too. And I hope you have an awesome vacation next week. Have a
Thank
good
you.
Holiday.
That's in the plans. Stay healthy and happy, and we'll see you on the 3rd.
All right. Awesome. You take care. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, December the 24th, 2021, and our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. Today is Christmas Eve. It's hard to believe. Mine and Michael's quarantine is over today, and we're preparing to go see Ryan and Gabby and Aria tomorrow, and we're excited about that. My dad is in the hospital still. They said that he has to stay there at the hospital until he's through his quarantine, which will be on Monday. And then they have already approved him to go to a rehab center to hold the space for that. When we went to pick him up the other day, he couldn't even stand up. They had not gotten him up or exercised him or anything. And so laying around for a week, he had gotten very weak and he couldn't even stand up or walk. So there was no way that we could bring him home. And so his quarantine is over on Monday, the 27th, and then they'll be moving him to a rehab and working with him to get his legs going again and getting him back up on his feet. So we hold the space that that happens and that we can get him back here. And so now at this time, I will welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody.
Oh, there you are.
I'm here. Welcome. Delighted you're with us, and I hope that your holy day season is truly that holy, that we each remember that this isn't about having a big party, but really it's about waking up to the truth of who we are and functioning truly as human beings. And, of course, our definition of human comes in a practical sense. That is, if you've ever held a newborn child and you've tapped into the essence of that newborn, you know what human life is. And what we're looking to do is to support the restoration of human life on Earth. If you look around at what's going on, the craziness that's happening in our culture, the rage, the fear, the outrage, from all sides of the spectrum, it's just so bizarre. It's like, have we forgotten who we are? And so remembering who we are, being accountable for functioning out of who we're not, when we're not, helps to open the space for something different. And space for all of those who are suffering through this COVID season, difficult time, so many lives lost, so many people suffering, jobs lost, finances, homes lost, just so bizarre, so crazy. News that came on just as my alarm went off was 2,000 flights have been canceled, so more people being kept away from home, Christmas with the holy days and all. So, you know, just sending love in the direction of every mind, heart, and being on the planet, holding a space for that experience of self as we're designed to experience life, and that is as the active presence of love. And glad that you're with us. I'm going to head right into the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We're coming up to completion of reading the book over the period of a year. We're getting coinciding pretty closely with the end of the year. We're on page 176, if you're following along with us. We're on chapter 24, looking at the forgiveness process and recognizing the false identification that so many people have with the mind of hostility and fear. And holding the space for each and every one of us to let loose of, to forgive hostility and fear. And that doesn't mean let hostility and fear off the hook. As the Greek-oriented culture would tell us, that forgiveness is about how, you know, whatever's going on in my life is your fault, and I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook for it. We're going to nix that idea. We're going to suggest you forget about ever forgiving anybody for anything, because it's not possible, and that you recognize that forgiveness is a specific technology, a tool for undoing the mind of hostility or fear and being restored to the truth of who we are as love, as human beings. And so we're talking to our character, Richard, about the forgiveness process. And where he started out, you know, it's a story about not a true character, but each story in the book is true. comes from actual interaction with real human beings in real circumstances where they've identified falsely with hostility and fear and found themselves in turmoil and trauma. And our character Richard showed up. He's on his third divorce, getting out of town. Somebody suggested he drop by and see me, and maybe there was some resolution to some of his pain and trauma. When he showed up, he knew that all he had to do was get out of Dodge. The problem was all these women in his life, and so he was going to take the geographic cure, head to the other side of the country, where, of course, we know he's going to find himself and every reality that he holds within him. Well, Richard's been walking through and confronting the realities in his mind that he had lots of people to blame for. Yeah. Our basic bottom line thesis is that every reality produced by the human mind based in hostility or fear is false, can be removed, and can leave us standing in the experience of ourselves as love. If we refuse to be responsible, if we refuse to apply forgiveness, then we'll find all kinds of people to blame for what's going on inside of us. And so Richard has just been acknowledging that his relationships, especially with women, have been impacted by what he was not willing to deal with, what he wasn't willing to own. And so he's realizing that something different is possible. In fact, the last thing he said in our reading yesterday is everyone, and it's a mind shifter, and a mind shifter is one of the tools we teach. You take an idea that doesn't sound true to your mind, but is more positive than what you hold in your mind, and you start writing that idea and let your mind just flow with what's inside of it that is resonated by that idea, and start to clean up those thoughts. So the mind shifter that Richard came up with, and he came up with this on his own, is it's safe to love, and I'm going to do it. Everyone, including myself, supports me in having loving, connected relationships, especially with women, and particularly with my sister. He's been doing a worksheet around his sister. So, you know, the basic bottom line is we are beings called love who live, move, and have our being in an energy field called love, which means that generated from within us continuously, 24/7, 365, is the presence of love. However, if we've got a different idea, if we want to do rage and guilt and fear and drama and trauma, we can overlay that love with something else and pretend that it's not there. The truth is, it's always there, it's never left, and it's always available if we choose to dump the hostility and fear-based thoughts that we've bought into and that we've considered to be more important. So I go on to explain to Richard, in Aramaic, they would say you've just been born into a new kingdom, a new level of insight. It's exciting. But you have a whole genetic and life history of going in another direction. Your mind has a store of realities that is inertia bound. Your reality structure will tend to keep going in its direction rather than its new way as soon as it's back in the driver's seat. Your words indicate it's sneaking back already. And that is as it should be. What do you mean it should be? I don't want to go back to all that old way. I'm ready to move on. I like this new way of thinking and being, and I can't wait to tell everyone that I meet. Be aware, Richard, that not everyone's going to want to hear what you have to say. Recall when you first called and thought it would be a waste of time to get together? Remember that don't storm the gates warning? Just be aware that you have work to do. And the forgiveness process has just begun. There will be other layers of this and other old realities based on childhood experiences you just uncovered. And they're still going to have to come forward for healing. Those old realities will attempt to convince you that they're true, but only because it is what you've trained them to do. I'm committed. What do? Richard beamed. First, I suggest a commitment to 5 written worksheets a day for the next 40 days. As you've just observed, the worksheets put you in touch with your unconscious dynamics. They initiate healing. In the ancient scriptures, the unconscious was called the desert or the heart. 40 days in the desert is very powerful. So what I'm suggesting to Richard is that he use the worksheet process and spend a quantity of time in contact with his own unconscious mind. 40 days in the desert. Recall in the scriptures they said, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. Notice how the unconscious dynamic just uncovered has set up the issues in your life. It's pretty clear to me right now, but doesn't this put an end to it? I mean, we already did a worksheet on this issue. Shouldn't it be over? Richard asked, hopefully. And we're not wanting to hold out false hope for Richard. Well, it is possible, but it's not usually that way. The master teacher of true forgiveness suggested it might require 77 times 70 worksheets, any given issue. In the scriptures, 7 is the number of completion. And the 0 added to that number is infinity. This means that you may do an infinite number of worksheets until you are complete with any given issue. The real work begins now. So what we're doing is we're offering some practical advice in recognizing, you know, one of the major attributes of what we call the non-being mind. The non-being mind is the mind that generates and lives in a world of hostility or fear. The major attribute of it is inertia. If you remember the definition of inertia from physics class in high school, a body moving in a particular direction at a particular rate of speed will tend to continue to move in that direction at that rate of speed until it's acted upon by an outside force. Each and every reality construct of the mind based in hostility or fear sooner or later must be faced and forgiven. Elsewise, if it's triggered into activity, it will tend to take over and lead us back into the old ways of thinking. And, you know, tying it together with the fact that we're completing this Christmas Eve, that the whole idea of Christmas is, you know, that word Christ is not the name of a man, but is actually the name of an office, one who held the space of an awakened mind was said to be living in the mind of Christ, not a religious idea, but that mind of love was the governing energy for that individual. And what we're looking to do with this forgiveness process is get to the point where everything based in hostility or fear is faced, forgiven. Everything in the inertia-bound mind that would tend to draw us back into the sphere of hostility and fear is going to have to be dealt with. And as one does that, as one weakens that mind, then literally that mind of love is birthed in the individual and comes forward, you know, out of an immaculate conception. There are meanings to all of those words that are very profound in terms of this process when you realize it. And that when your mind can stand in front of any given situation, and instead of being tainted by something from the past, you know, you look at this worksheet that this character Richard has just done on his sister. Every time he interacted with women, perception of women was tainted by this pain that he carried and his resentment at his sister for having had such an easy life and he having had such a difficult life. And so his perception was always compromised by that unresolved hostility or fear when it came to relationships, especially with women. So he has a chance, as he cleans his mind of that, to have literally immaculate, literally have an untainted view of women in his life, rather than defaulting back to these old painful realities that he's made all about women, that he's projected into his brain's image of women. And so when you collapse the mind's capacity for some form of hostility or fear, and you allow the mind to be restored to the active presence of love, everything changes. You know, when you recognize that that's what the season is really about, and there are millions of minds looking in that direction, perhaps unconsciously, not really knowing what it's about, but turning their minds to the space of love, turning their minds to living as human beings, then there is an energy created that each of us can take advantage of. This particular time of year, with all of the energy focused on and moving in the direction of awakening, moving in the direction of goodwill, there's an inertia movement toward healing. And we can, if we're conscious, take advantage of that and allow that energy to support us in the healing process. And as we clean out, you know, as we finish out this year, our objective would be to recognize that the new year is an opportunity to make new commitments to do one's own work, and then to be supported and to be of support to others who also want to move in the direction of doing the work of healing. And the whole bottom line, simple objective is to be restored to the presence of active love, your true nature. It's mind-boggling when you think and when you look at all the hostility and fear, and then just go back. I mean, go back to the moment where you held a newborn and recognize that every raging, hateful, prejudiced, vicious, politically rageful mind, all the garbage that's going on, all the trash that's being talked in our world, go back to the moment of birth of each of those as children. And what did we have? They had to be taught to hate. They had to be taught to live in fear. They had to be taught the prejudices they have. They don't come with the package. They may be structured into carbon-based memory, so there's kind of a propensity toward those things, because those things, generally speaking, have been going on for many generations in people's bloodline. So it's kind of easy to fall into those patterns. But go back to the moment of that child coming into the world. How many times does a child have to be beaten in order to come back with hate and rage and fear? And recognize it's not our natural way. It's not what we're made of, and it's not what we're made for. And the objective of our work together is to change that dynamic and to create support for people really truly recognizing who they are. And at this particular time of year, what this season is really about is bringing forward that mind of love in each and every one of us. Whether it's in our relationships, whether it's in our business world, our business interactions, whatever world it's in. And so we're honored and delighted that you're here to lend your ears to this conversation, to be part of it. And we would love to hear from you. We would love to hear your voice. And if there's some way we can support you, if there are questions about anything that we've shared, you know, perhaps sharing some of your experience of using the tools. Maybe there's been a particularly important piece of work that you've done that you'd be willing to share with us that might inspire others, that might, you know, serve as an example for others to see on a practical level that no matter what form of hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, separation, drama, trauma, hatred, and vengeance is happening, that energy can be replaced by active present love. And the whole idea of starting this community, the whole idea of this 10-year workshop that's been going, this 10-year conversation on Mindshifters Radio has been to extend that to the world as far and as wide as we can possibly do it. There are many tools on our website. You know, I think we're up over 20,000 pages now. You're welcome to go to the website, whyagain.org, and access all of the tools that we've got. You can go to your app store on your phone and download the Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness app. If you just type that into your app store, and you'll find that, you know, in the app, you've got the worksheet process you can do right there live. You can read the book from the app. You can listen to the Wellness to Stillness meditation. You can access the commitments, videos, audios, ask questions. You know, we're doing everything we can possibly do to facilitate this process being easy and accessible to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And so we're glad that you're here with your listening ears. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet on both fronts. And I think we had a conversation going yesterday that we were going to continue, didn't we? I'm not sure if we completed that or not. It's Dusty.
Well, Dusty's out there and pushes one, and let's go for it. There was a possibility there might be some more conversation to be had. There was a question coming up right at the end. So, Dusty, if you're out there,
okay,
push one and let's have a conversation.
904.
There he is. Hey, young man.
Yes. Hey, aloha, everybody. And
aloha.
It's good to hear your collective voices today.
It's good to be heard.
What's that? Yeah. Since I've got this interim phone here, I can actually be heard, and that's I don't have to have people grumbling at me because they think I'm mumbling, which perhaps sometimes I do, but hey, you know. I think somewhere along the line we were talking about, I'm caught in between two things here because there was a lady, I think yesterday, the day before maybe, there was somebody that was talking about that they were had some trouble and hung on some things. And I just heard you say, how many times must a child be beat before they hate? Something like that.
Yeah.
Out of the book. And I just wanted to share an experience because that happened to me. And, you know, maybe
go for it.
Maybe by telling it, you might hear something that objectively that I never quite got. But when I was about five, my mother we had moved to Idaho from Hollywood, uh-huh, and she was running this part of this hospital and married a guy that, I mean, he looked like a Greek Adonis. I mean, he was really something. and he was incredibly strong. He was big also. But while my mother was in the hospital giving birth to my little sister, it was the first time I was with this fellow alone. And, you know, I knew there was something wrong with him the first time I saw him as a little kid, but I didn't know what. I didn't think that deep. But I'm sitting in this one room, and I'm kind of trying to bring this up in the way it really happened. And I know I'm stumbling a little bit here word-wise.
We're here holding the space.
So I'm
just
sitting.
Take your time.
Thank you. I was sitting there. I'm playing with these little cars or something. And all of a sudden I hear this noise, this voice. I turn around and standing right next to me, look, it was like straight up from where I was, way up there. I looked up and it was this Claude guy who was supposed to be a stepdad. He wasn't. But they wanted to pretend that he was for the community. I could see him. His face was angry looking, and his arms were flailing, and there was words coming out, and it was sort of, I was detached from it, or it was a little bit like a dream, because I'm looking up, and I'm seeing this going on, and he's got a little kind of a little dark energy around him, and I went, oh, this guy wants to hurt me. And I had never experienced that kind of overt hostility, and I couldn't understand. I mean, why the heck would he want to hurt me? He doesn't even know me. He doesn't even know what I am, and or anything. And so he started smacking me around hard because
are you breathing?
Something. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I just came through something here a little while ago that was I'm not very well oxygenated here, but thank you for the breathing. So anyways, he drugged me into the bathroom and accused me of doing something. I think it was loosening nuts on the back of the tub or something really stupid that I had nothing to do with, didn't even know what he was talking about. And he said, why did you do that? And he started beating on me. Now, I was tough. Even at five, I was kind of a, you know, tough little guy, you know. And but it hurt. He was strong. He's the three strongest men I've ever known, he was one. And a big callous hands, and he's smacking me really hard. Mostly in the rear end, but not always. It was a little bit all over. And he just kept doing it and accused me, why did you do this? Why did you do this? Well, you did this. You did this. I says, no, I don't even know what you're talking about. Well, you did this. You did this. And to make a long story short, the pain got so bad that I thought I had to admit that I had done this. Maybe he'll stop, for God's sakes. So I said, okay, I did it. And he went, oh, yeah, now you're lying. You were lying. And then he started in heavier that way. And it was very sadistic because I got beat for doing it or I got beat for not doing it and lying or whatever. I mean, I couldn't win.
Right.
And I went back and forth after a while out of survival, just saying one thing or another. Yeah, I did it. I didn't do it. I just, but it didn't make any difference. He just went until his rage, his pocket of rage had temporarily run out. And, and that was my first introduction to this fellow. But you know what? And this is where I'm going with this. Rather than this sad ass story, excuse my language, but it was that And I'm relating this back to something I heard this woman say in your show, and but I've known this, I mean, since that time.
Right.
That went on for like over a decade. And that
could be
something like some. Yeah. And
wow.
But I never hated him for two reasons. One is I don't think I really don't have hate in me. I don't know. Sometimes I look for it. I go, where am I hiding my hate? And I have, disdain for malevolent activities, but
right.
I don't really hate. I don't have it. I just don't have it.
Good
and
for you.
What saved me in terms of really getting it is when he first started, and I looked at this guy and I went, oh, he's pathetic. Ah, that was where I took all that stuff. I understood that this fellow was, there was something wrong with him, and he was pathetic. And because he was pathetic, I couldn't hate him anyway. And
right.
I've never heard anybody really say, bring up the pathetic thing, but that hit me. I'm maybe 5 years old, and I have more consciousness than this guy. He's pathetic. I didn't mean I wasn't scared to death of getting beat, forever for a long time.
Right.
And,
right.
And I did, and all those things. And I realized that, other kids got spanked, now and then because they did something or didn't do something. I never got spanked once by this fellow. I just got beat. But the word pathetic was what got me out of that. I mean, I don't know if it brought up compassion or not, but some
That's what I was coming with. That's what was coming to me, was that you had a level of compassion in seeing his infirmity that really saved you.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that.
Because if you hadn't been able to see his infirmity, it certainly could have led you down the same type of dark road that he was on. So that's pretty profound that you had that level of awareness at that tender age. That's powerful.
Thank you. Yeah. I guess it was. And that was, I think it was... I'm just going to I don't have to speculate. It was kind of a carryover from a continuum of lives, and I know you don't talk about that much in the show, but that has played out big in my life. And so that went on, and so I eventually got away from that jailer. When I got out of high school, I graduated. Of course, I'll tell you what ended the beatings was, just in case, I don't know, it might do somebody some good if they hear it or not. I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll do me some good to say it. But when I was 16, he hadn't really, I was getting big at 16, I'm bigger. I mean, I was almost 5 foot, but I mean, I was older and, for some reason, he started in on me again for something. And my mother, who never got in the way, she couldn't believe he was doing that still. And she got in the way. And I remember that in his rage, I mean, it's only been recently. In fact, I think listening to your program helped bring this word up for me, rage. Because it wasn't just, he was angry or brutal or something. He was a rageaholic. And he pushed her so hard. Now, my mom had rheumatoid arthritis, was heavy, could just, all she could do was walk well, and he threw her. And she would have gone down really hard, but she hit a door after about 4 or 5 feet, and and that stopped it, but it hurt her. And so something in me, and it's funny, I couldn't quite get this resolution ever, I guess, for me, but I could get it relative to her. But anyways, when he did that, this thing went in my mind, and I mean, just one of these things that happens once in a while in this life. I had a very clear resolution, I thought to myself, as codependent as it may sound, well, he can do that to me, but he can't do that to her. Kind of at that stage that, yeah, I could take it. Yeah, I knew, you know, how to roll with the punches and blah, blah, blah. But she didn't. And she was old and infirm, and she was already in agony. And I thought, oh, well, he can't do that to her. I had this thought, and it was so clear. And I went, well, if he ever does that to her again, I'm going to kill him. Now, he's a big guy, and I'm a little guy. But in my mind, I thought I can always sneak up on him with a baseball bat and do him in or something. And not that I would
What happens
really
to your breath
that.
As you say that?
Oh, I'm just...
What happens to your breath so as I can, you say that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I jammed up. Yes, it did, my brother. It jammed up.
Yeah. So I want you to soften as you hold that thought, to soften your body, to soften your breath and let it move through you, let your breath move through you and open the residuals of that energy. That's pretty, it's a pretty intense load to carry around.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yeah. So, but this resolution in me was just a line in the sand. And I mean, it was like a line that would not be crossed. And I made it I just took a stand. I had never, even in my thought, taken a stand with this guy because it would never do me any good anyway. But right then, at that age, at that time, I did. I decided I would do him in if he ever did that to my mom again. And you know what? He never laid a hand on me again after that. It went into his subconscious too. I know it did. Because he just stopped.
No.
Never. I mean, he still said awful things, but he never laid a hand on me.
Right.
But the pathetic, we're back. And we're so we're that. But what's your thought on that, me drawing that line? Would you have any feeling about that? It was just mental.
Yeah. The main thing I would invite you to do is to recognize any residual. You know, it sounds like it was probably something that came out of a space of pain and identification with her pain, and that the reason I kept inviting you to look at what was happening with your breath is that if you're carrying any residual of that in your body, that's a disintegrated or a dangerous energy to carry in tissue. And if you can notice a part of you that as you're speaking about it, your breath cuts off, then you want to restore that part of you. You know, if you can see that, well, maybe you're breathing up in your chest or maybe you're breathing down in your belly, but your breath isn't coming up into your chest and you can restore the breath, then you can let go of that, the intensity of that energy held in tissue, and it'll take your healing process to another level. Especially something that, you know, if it's there that you've carried for so many decades.
Right. And, that's right. And I'm also dealing with with something going on in my stomach and stuff. And it's funny that I would call now because I'm having a little hard time getting all my diaphragm stuff working anyway. But yes, I was doing that. And thank you.
So very likely.
Also, I have never in my life plotted to kill somebody or even considered it. I mean, even
right.
the Army couldn't get me to kill anybody. Ultimately, they couldn't. And right now, talking to you and actually saying this out loud, I realized, wow, I really kind of thought, you know, made up my mind I was going to do that if it happened again. And I went, whoa, you know, I mean, I can't kill anybody. You know what I mean? I can't, it's not, I don't want that karma or whatever it is. But
right.
I made that, I had to, that's how desperate the situation was. And yeah, he was pathetic. And as he got older, he had one good period for about 8 years, in the 80s, early 90s, the 90s. And he was okay to be around. And then he went back to his old ways and did a bunch of, I don't know. He just turned out to be poor guy, was so damaged. Oh God,
yeah.
He was so damaged, and I know, I can kind of see where it came from in his family line, and I feel sorry for him. Right now, I'm feeling sorry for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
so
anyways,
my
I don't even know how he got on. What's that? Go ahead.
Well, my invitation would be to recognize that energy, and as you tap into and open up feeling sorry for him, where do you feel that in your tissue structure? Just pay attention to where that sensation is.
You know, I can tell you where, well, right now I'm a little thrown off because right now my stomach hurts from something.
Okay.
I drank a bunch of coffee earlier and it didn't do me any good. But this was prompted a little bit because you spent quite a bit of time on the phone talking to some woman who you knew. And, I mean, even if I remember the name, it's not my place to mention it, but what struck
right.
me was that
what she was going through.
Yeah. And she kept going back in and she'd gone back into that, in and out of that energy, even with the
right.
tools that have been gotten for you, from you. And I've seen that before where people get trapped and they, in something from, and they go back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, there's a tendency amongst people to think, well if I do it one more time, it'll be different. And
mm-hmm.
it's usually not. And
yeah.
So anyways, I recently I've been thinking about this guy, and about a week ago or so, I had a meditation, and as I was finishing up, I could feel his energy or something, you know, that whole thing come up for me. And I realized I needed to love this guy, and I wrote down in my journal something about him. And now my little
sister.
So my
invitation?
Yeah.
Before you move to the conversation about your sister, my invitation to you would be that you know, go to the website and print off the worksheet if you don't have any copies of the worksheet, or go to the app and take this whole circumstance that you've spoken about. I don't think it's a coincidence that there's a disturbance in your stomach, and a week ago you opened looking at some of the dynamics from that relationship, and maybe it's just time for your body to process out that old trauma around this man. And your stomach may not be reacting to coffee. It may be reacting to your uncovering this whole energetic pattern that's been carried in your body for so long. And I'd invite you. I know you do a lot of breath practice work, that you do some of your breath practice work and focus while you're focused, while you're thinking about this whole circumstance and what went down and what happened and your intensity of the action you were willing to take, to breathe into that, and perhaps it'll be the resolution of that trauma that's going on in your stomach. Because the body is the mind. You know, where we hold energy, people think about the mind as being in the brain, but in fact, it's every cell in the structure that stores information, and where we store disintegrative energy. You know, if we stay away from it and we avoid it and we deny it and we suppress it and we keep it, you know, hidden, there's not, you know, a lot of disturbance that happens until it turns into degeneration. And then the tissue actually starts to degenerate. And when I allow myself to go back with awareness and recognize where that is, the breath is one of the big keys to doing it. It may be time for your body to let go of that energy that was stored from all those years of resentment.
Yes, thank you for that. Yeah, there's a bit of that. I will say the stomach thing started before I even called in, but I have noticed recently, in the last few weeks maybe, that my initial, I've really worked through, you know, most of the initial, or maybe hopefully all of the initial trauma or whatever from this person. But what I'm finding out, and it's probably not just me that does this, but that even though I work out the main thing, although I am going to go back and look at that line in the sand and you know, do a worksheet kind of thing on it. And
definitely would do that.
Is that there are secondary and tertiary, et cetera, echoes from things like this.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what's been coming up for me, the echoes. Oh, okay. Yeah, but how did that change your behavior, or why, or da-da-da-da? Anyways, I'm working on the echoes of that, and some of the echoes of a really powerful negative source are pretty strong echoes, some of them.
Yes.
And the thing about the echoes, or the, you know, the little fallout, is that they have a tendency, at least in me, to be more unconscious.
Right.
And conscious because oh yeah, we already cleaned that up, so what's the problem? Well, the problem was that caused you to do this, and that caused you to do that, and then that, and that's, you know, the bum. So it all goes back to that anyway.
Well, as we're seeing in this conversation we've been having with the character Richard, there's a principle called diffusion. And
yes.
If you look at, you know, this worksheet that Richard's just done, it's been on his sister, and he's seeing how his resentment toward his sister has diffused into his relationships with women.
Right.
And if there's been some diffusion of, you know, has there ever been any repercussion in your relationships with men, with this man doing what he's done? Has there ever been any overprotectiveness with women that has impacted your relationships? You know, there can be many angles that the mind plays those things out in. And as you apply the forgiveness process, you literally remove those things. And when you talk about, well, you know, I was doing some work around this man a week ago, it sounds like you've really opened a major, you know, life issue here. And it doesn't surprise me that your tissue structure's reflecting some disturbance and that your mind is focusing on and thinking about those things, because, you know, the stomach is a part of the mind. And if that's where things, you know, oftentimes things stored in the gut can create a lot of trauma if we don't
never deal with them. And that's why I'm suggesting you do some breath work there, and specifically focusing literally where the disturbance is in your body, and just see what comes up, see what moves. It may be total resolution of this issue.
Yes, thank you. That's you're right on that one, and I appreciate it. I do attempt to live from love. I do live from love for the most part, but these kind of things, it's kind of scary to find a shadowy, you're calling it a diffusion. I'd have to say for me, it's more of a, it's like if you make a musical note and there's overtones or there's different tones off that tone, but these echoes are very subtle and devious, because they become part of the fabric of, you know, of me a little bit. And yes, it's definitely made a difference in the way I relate to men and women, that's for sure. I have always, however, just kind of put this on a bright note, because I know I sucked up a lot of the time for this program. My little sister, he never laid a hand on her, thank God. He never did. And so I've gone around this life being the big brother to any and all women and children. I mean, it's just like, okay, I'll stand right in the breach. I'll go down swinging, but I'm not going to let so-and-so be hurt. And I've done that I don't think I've overdone that so far. Not in action. I've had to do it. I have done it. I love my sister, and my Christmas is about my sister. And I mean, Richard's got a problem with his. Mine saved me, because in this dysfunctional family where everybody, they were crazy. My mom and my dad, they were just absolutely batshit. But she was a sweet, like you talked about the newborn, she kept that glow in her. And her sweetness saved me when I went out because my mom did some stuff that wasn't very good either. I mean, really bad earlier on. And my sister saved me, because I always thought of women as my sister. Any woman anywhere is my sister, whether she knows her or not. And I'm a big brother, whether I think of it that way or not. And I've always been very protective. And, you know, I've studied keto and a bunch of those other things. And sometimes I've gone into a situation, maybe with a couple gals that were in dire situations, for instance, and just took a shot and tried to diffuse the situation and make it okay, and it always turned out good. I don't know if I overdo that or not, but I have noticed that diffusion thing has tainted my relationship a little bit with some guys. And so I really should do the a worksheet breathing thing right through that. There are other reasons why I would have problems, but the fact that I'm even talking about this now, and that this conversation was
powerful,
this woman you had brought it up. I didn't need to tell anybody that story.
I hear you. I'm glad you were on the show to hear her and have this open up. It's like, you know, that these are the types of things that people generally keep, these don't matter, I don't have to look at it, I don't have to deal with it. And the fact is, if I can bring it
to conscious awareness in the presence of active love, I can process out the disturbing energies that I don't need to carry around anymore for me. I don't need to carry around anymore for the planet. There's a great line in The Course in Miracles that says, millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you do. You know, what you open, what you clean up in your mind, in your body, literally opens an energy window for every other person on the planet who has the same issue to, you know, take one step closer to being able to open and move through it rather than stay stuck in it their whole lives.
Yeah, I got goosebumps on that when you said that about the whole planet and that sort of thing. Because I walk around with kind of a planetary awareness. I just do it. And it's not that I really even...
It's what we're designed for. What allowed you to have the compassion for him as a five-year-old was one of the things that you had earned in your life, was the ability to hold that compassion and that vision for something that most people collapse and lose very early in their lives. So that's powerful that you've been able to keep that open and to keep moving in that way. You know, when I think back, you know, for those who aren't aware of it, Dusty and I have a history that goes back about close to, I don't know, 42, 43 years. And I was saying to Jeannie yesterday, Dusty, that, you know, over on Ivy Road when, you know, I lived, you know, rented a room in the house with Patrick McGann, and that you were around, and just that your energy, even though we never spent a lot of time together, that, you know, after we each moved on from there, I mean, literally for four decades, whenever I would talk to Patrick, I'd always ask, you know, where's Dusty? I've lost Dusty. I don't know where he is. I mean, for decades, Patrick and I had that conversation. And so when he, you know, made contact with you again, it's like, oh, this is so awesome. And I think that's one of the reasons, because I would identify with you in that. And it always has been a contact point between you and I. For me.
Yes. Well, yes, and that's beautiful. I appreciate that. I really feel that. And yes, that was a good time. And I have often wondered where you and other people went to. You know, some of the beings in my life that have come through that felt special to me, especially, I went, oh, well, where is that light now? And
I hear you.
And once in a while it happens, and it's I have to say it's been a gift, a big gift, to have a relationship at some level with Michael, with you, and even Andy up or wherever he is, down in, was it
right,
Ecuador?
South America,
somewhere.
Right? Yeah.
And so I appreciate that. And I know we're at the end of the show, so I'm going to say a mahalo for this. I didn't expect this to come up today, but oh boy.
Well, I'm glad it did and opened what it's opened and holding the space for the deepest levels of healing.
Yes, thank you. And the healing for me, I'm hoping will give me a more clear and stronger impetus to do the right thing for the wholeness of the planet. I just can't think of just even humans. Yeah, it's all like we talked about yesterday. It was all 3 million of the species and the soul of the mother, the Rupa Dukudcha or whatever. That's, to me, that's how I look at it, is the planet. You know, it's the planet as a whole, you know, it says. And
heading for critical mass is what this work is about, so we're glad you're part of it.
Okay, well, mahalo and mele kalekamakas, everybody. Are you going to be on Christmas or not?
Oh, yeah. We do this every day, so we'll be here.
Well, Monday through Friday.
Rock and roll.
So we'll be back on Monday.
Oh, yeah. Christmas Day is Saturday.
Oh, that's right. It's Friday.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah, today's Friday. Yeah.
Okay, well.
And I'm going to call you right after the show if you're available.
Okay, will do.
All right. Everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Guardian. Bye-bye.